When I tasted it, it tasted so good. My brother had come to my mom's house. I was there around Christmas time, and he had stopped at a place called Heggie's. Now, in Canton, Ohio, Heggie's is a big deal, because only in Canton, Ohio can you get Heggie's chocolates. And if you want Heggie's chocolates, that's where you have to go. So I'm in Ohio, and my brother comes with a bag of Heggie's chocolates. But he had in that bag of chocolates something that was more precious than I had ever imagined, because I'd never had it before. He says, these are pecan, chocolate-covered pecan, I don't even, turtles, I guess you would call them. Oh, let's just think about this for a while. Well, maybe you've never tasted it, so let me think about it for a while, and you just enjoy my face. Maybe that's what you do. Because on my face, you can probably say, man, that must be some good chocolate. If he's going to react like that to chocolate. And I don't know what it is. It's just chocolate. It's just pecans. I've had chocolate before. I had pecans before. But I don't know what it is that before I leave, I've got to stop at Heggie's and get a bag of these chocolates. And I craved them. And then they were gone. Isn't that the worst? When you crave something that you have that is just so good, and you enjoy it in the moment that it's there, and you savor it, you try to savor it, you savor it. My mouth's watering right now, so if it's there, if everybody in the front, watch out. But once they're gone, you go, man, I want that again. So I was at a store, I bought some pecans, and I had some Hershey's Kisses. Jordan had made a thing for Isaiah that had Hershey Kisses on it. And so I got the Hershey Kisses out. I melted the chocolate. I put the pecans in there and put them out on the parchment paper. And I'm just going, oh, this is going to be so good. And then I tried one. And there must be something other than the chocolate. There must be something other than the pecan. It must be some magic that Heggie's has that they do with this chocolate that makes it so good. Because it was chocolate, it was pecans, and that desire for more wasn't really like it was before. I don't know what it was. But somehow, some way, they created a concoction that pleased my senses so much that it created a craving for more. And we are beings with physical cravings, physical desires, that when we have something that is so good, our brain tells us, you want more of this. This is really good. So what are those things for you as you're thinking about it that your brain just says, you want more of this? What is it? What do you crave? Was it chocolate, Mary? Yeah? Greg's chocolate? Just chocolate. Any other things that you just crave? What's that? Taco chips. Corn chips. Yeah. Ice cream. Chocolate ice cream. With hot fudge on top. What's that? Moose munch? What's got caramel corn, chocolate covered prop. Oh, yeah. You know, so we can go on, and I'm going to lose everybody because, you know. So let's bring it all back here. We're talking about craving. And isn't it nice that God created us with a way to enjoy his creation? Isn't that a blessing? That we're just not numb? That he gives us things that we can enjoy? But you know, sometimes these cravings can get out of control because some of the things we crave can be good. Some of the things we can crave can be neutral. And some of the things we can crave can really bring a bad impact in life. And it can actually destroy lives because what happens a lot of times, because we have these senses that we can feel good and joy and just taste, we also know that there's other negative emotions that we can experience also. And we realize that if we can experience the good ones, we can experience the bad ones. That's just the way life is. But the challenge is when I go through some of the bad emotions of life, what am I going to do to get through those times? Am I going to trust God that He's going to be with me in those times of challenge, of sorrow, of hurt, of pain? Or am I going to just run to something that will sedate my mind for a moment, that'll ease the pain for a second, but then it just is there again, so I need more of it and I have more of it, and then all of a sudden that thing becomes the ultimate thing. And I stop thinking about God and I think about this thing that is going to put down the pain. Well, we know that the pain of life is in this world because humans are rebellious. Because there was no pain before Adam and Eve's rebellion. And it was because of rebellion that they had to work by the sweat of their brow. It was because of rebellion that there is pain in childbirth. All these conflicts that are created because of our desire not being satisfied as God intends, but as we desire. That's really the crux of it, isn't it? That if we could just trust in God that He's going to see us through it, then we can take the blessings He has and use them appropriately so that they are blessings and we don't turn them into curses. But isn't that exactly what we humans tend to do when we abandon God? We take that which is good and turn it into something that is bad. And what you eat and how you eat can affect you long term, can it? But how often do we not eat for the long term, but we eat for the moment? Because we want that on our tongue. And we get that flood from our brains. We go, that was good. But we forget that that pain can still be there. That thing that we're craving to take the pain away doesn't do that. It can't do that. It was not intended to do that. And when we allow those things to overwhelm us, the thing that was good then becomes an inflictor of pain. Isn't that amazing? That how when we abuse the blessing of God, it becomes something that afflicts more pain on us. And we need to have wisdom to be able to see that difference. We have to have wisdom to know when to stop. And we only get that wisdom if we go to God and understand who He is, how He created us, what He wants us to be, so that we can say stop the things that are taking over our lives that will bring pain, sorrow, and agony. That we can say stop and turn to Him. And we can make choices where we lean more heavily on God, that when we resist those temptations and those cravings, that they will pass. And God will give us the strength to endure that. And one of the things that we, without wisdom, believe about the world is that we're annuals. That life is beautiful, and it is. But those of you who garden, what's the downside of an annual? It dies. The beauty of an annual is what? Oh, yeah, they're always flowering, they're always blooming, they're always giving you what you want, and they're satisfying, and it's good. But life is a lot like that from eyes that aren't wise, from eyes that are blind. That we only seek the thing that flowers and blooms and pleases in this life, in long term, not realizing that there's going to be a longer term than just 3 months, 4 months out of our growing season. That there's 8 months, 9 months where this isn't going to be there. Then how are you going to survive? Then how are you going to endure? Because you can't look at those things and say, oh, what a beautiful flower. Now you're going to have to lean on something else. But when we look at the world only from annual eyes, we look for the bright and showy things. We look for those things that are going to satisfy in the moment. And what that does, it, in our gardens, it brings weeds and it brings rocks. And it starts choking out the perennials, the things that are there for the long term. And when we're only annual looking people, what we do is we start buying in our deeply planted in the soil of our culture, the soil of our world, the soil of this world's trust, the soil of this world's hopes, the soil of this world's goals. And that's as people who are striving to follow Jesus, that's the world we come out of as being annual focused people. And we don't leave that world easily because there's a lot of good there we don't want to let behind. But sometimes we can properly embrace some of that stuff and let it go when it goes, but we can't hold on to it when it can't be held on to. And what Jesus does, he comes to bring us a hope that's other than what this world offers us. But when we're looking at this world from annual eyes, then the purpose of life is get what you can, as much as you can, while you can. Because what do you have left? People who don't have a hope of life after death, their hope is only life here. And we know that this life doesn't last. That because we have life in the physical world, there's also death in the physical world. But we're not just physical people, praise God. Because we're made in his image, he's born in us a spirit that allows us to transcend just this physical world. But this physical world is so attractive. And we can trust in the things that this world says are valuable. Silver and gold, diamonds and rubies. When what good is it when all that fades? What good is it when you get to the fall of your life? What good is it when you get to winter times of your life and the sparkle and the shine and isn't there anymore? What hope do you have? Well, there can be a self-serving focus in life. Even Christians can get into the routine of self-serving Christianity, where everything they do in their Christianity is about serving themselves. They might do good things, but it's really about, do I feel like I'm a good person now? It's unlike what the prophets were looking into, where they were looking into the things of God, as Peter says, and they were wondering when these glorious things were going to happen, and they realized that they weren't serving themselves. And we have to be careful that in our walking with God, in our being in a body of believers, that it's not about how is the church serving me? Does it make me feel good? Because feelings go away. One of the things that Peter says, it says it's about the word of truth. And sometimes the word of truth don't make you feel very good. Sometimes the word of truth is a goad that tries to get you off a path that is bright and shiny and pleasing in the moment back to a path that might be a little bit harder to walk. But if we're focused on how it feels rather than living in truth, we're going to run to a place where it will make me feel good even though they abandon the words of truth. Because the words of truth don't matter anymore. It's just, are the people feeling good when they walk out the door so that they'll walk back in the door? Because we don't want to say something that'll make them walk out the door so that they don't come back. But that's not what Jesus cared about. He cared about truth. And there were times when he told people truth and they walked away. And I'm sure it grieved him. But his ministry wasn't about how many people were going to follow him. His ministry was being faithful to the message and the word of his Father for the sake of the people that the Father and the Son and the Spirit love. And that those who had eyes that could see and would embrace this new reality, that it wasn't all about the shiny, but about the faithful, the faith-filled. That walk of faith is very challenging. That walk of faith can be very hard. That walk of faith can bring persecution, and it might not feel very good. Who wants you to feel good and then make you think that's truth? If it's not God, it's Satan. But our world is so focused on how it makes me feel. They will abandon truth. And then they'll proclaim things about places that proclaim truth and say they're hard, they're mean, they're rough. And it's like, maybe they're not. Maybe they're just not serving you. But that's the challenge of our culture. That's the challenge of our world. That's how we're deeply planted in the things of our culture that we have to be aware that goes away when winter comes. And Peter says these are empty ways because they don't last, they don't sustain, they don't provide. And he goes on to say, and these are because of our evil desires. And we just got done with James. James is about faith in action, right? And he says, when tempted, no one should say, God is tempting me, for God cannot tempt by evil, nor is he tempting anyone. But each person is tempted when they're dragged away by their own evil desires and enticed. So if I don't have a craving for that thing, you could put that thing in front of me all day and it won't matter. But if I have a craving for that thing, then I'm going to have to stop and think, do I need that thing? Is it going to satisfy me? Is it going to bring me longevity? Or is it just going to medicate me? Is it just going to numb me? He says, after desire is conceived, it gives birth to sin, and sin, when it's full grown, gives birth to death. And death is all around when we're self-seeking. Later on in chapter 4, he says, so what causes fights and quarrels among you? Don't they come from your desires that battle within you? You desire, but you do not have, and you kill. He's talking to church people. You kill, you covet, you cannot get what you want, so you quarrel and you fight. Listen to the words of people who are denigrating other people. And it's sad when those people are church people. Church, don't be one of those people. But it's so easy to be like the people of the world when our roots are still stuck in the world. He says, when you don't get because you don't ask, and when you do ask, you don't receive. Why is that? Why is it that you're not getting the blessing from God that you're seeking? It's because it's all about you. And wouldn't that have been a terrible thing if when Jesus came to this world, and he made it all about him? He didn't make it all about him. He came as a servant. He came as a ransom. He came as a hope. He came as a savior. And he's wanting to get us to transform our minds out of the old ways of thinking. And those old ways of thinking in chapter 2 and verse 3 of 1 Peter, he says, these evil desires you had when you lived in ignorance, is the diet of malice, deceit, hypocrisy, envy, and slander. And he's talking about the different things we feed on, isn't he? He says there's things of the world and there's things of God. What are you going to drink in? What is it that you're going to allow to be the source of how you engage the world? And if you're drinking the cup of the world, there's going to be malice. You're going to look at people with disdain if they don't agree with you or they think differently of you. You're going to be deceitful because you're going to want to get your way. You're going to be hypocritical because you're going to want people to think you're something when you're not that at all so that you can get something from them. Maybe their praise. Oh, what a good person they are. Oh, that's all I want. So if I keep people thinking that, even though I've got this other stuff going on, I'm good. Envying one another, wanting what they have, and slandering one another, trying to destroy their name because you don't like what they've done. You don't like what they've said. And instead of trying to get together to rectify any things that have gone wrong, like Jesus has done, coming down to rectify what's gone wrong between the world and the Father, these people aren't wanting to be rectified and reconciled. They want to continue to throw grenades and bombs at one another to destroy one another. That's not God's children. And if you hear God's children doing that, walk away or say something. Don't engage in it. But it's easy to engage in it because it kind of feeds that evil desire that's in us. But we have to stand up against those things because those are of Satan, not of God. And we have a new living hope. These fading flowers, because of God's mercy, are being transformed from annuals into perennials. Because of his great mercy, because of his great hope, he is trying to help us to be wise in how we can sink our roots into something better that is more nourishing, that is more long-lasting, that is not just going to be beneficial for me in the moment, but it's going to be beneficial for me and others in this world. We're going to reflect Jesus more often in our life because people are going to see we're going to be able to endure things of this world, the pressures and the griefs and the sadnesses and the sorrows because of what God has done, because that we have faith in what he is doing for us, because he has been merciful to us, because Jesus has died as a sacrifice for us, because the Spirit is sanctifying himself in us through his work for his work. Isn't that amazing that this God who would look at a world that turned their back on him would call them to be a part of transforming a world's focus from selfishness to selflessness? And that when we join in that, there is great glory and there's reasons to endure because we have a purpose beyond this world. This precious faith that is born in us because of the Father, because of the Son, because of the Spirit, it empowers us to bring hope. And this hope empowers us to bring endurance. Because we're not focused on what's not, we're focusing on what is. And we only can do that if our eyes are not focused on this world, but the spiritual world. If our eyes are focused in his truth, not my feeling. Because when my feeling lines up with his truth, great and powerful things happen. When Jesus was there in Gethsemane and his feelings weren't lined up with God's truth, he asked, "Take this cup away from me." But he knew that he had to submit for our sake, like the prophets Peter talks about. They didn't see it happening for their sake. They saw it happening for our sake. But they longed for it to be for them too. And the angels looked and wondered. And it's for us that this thing, this sacrifice, this salvation has been brought to us because of God's great mercy. So he says, now we're citizens of life, not death. We're perennials, not annuals. Stop focusing on the things of this world ultimately, because ultimately they will go away. But ultimately focus on things of the eternal world that can sustain you now and into the future. We are citizens of hope and not despair. So if you're a despairing person, maybe what you need to do is question whether your focus is on God or on yourself. There will be pain. There's nothing wrong with enduring through it. There's nothing wrong with praying to God and going, God, if you can take it away. Jesus did. Paul did. But both Paul and Jesus had to endure their pain. Maybe we do too. But it's what we do when we're enduring that pain that tells people that there is something better to focus on. That as Paul endured the pain of the thorn in his flesh, he continued to preach, he continued to example for the people what it meant to be a person walking with God in a world that has fallen, to try to help people see that there is a better way of living. And praise be to Jesus, who endured the pain of the flogging, who endured the pain of the cross, who endured the pain of all the lies that were told about him as he's hanging on the cross. If you're the Son of God, come down, then we'll believe you. And he endured those things, and he looked down at people like us, and he says, forgive them, they don't know what they're doing. And when we're looking at the world and people in the world whose roots are entrenched in the worldly soil, we're going to see them doing things, and instead of destroying them, we will be more like Jesus and say, Father, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing because they don't have eyes that can see what I see. They don't have ears that are listening to what I love to listen to, that you are a God of hope, that you're a God of grace. And then we become people of service. Service for service's sake. Service for others' sake. Because what did Jesus get out of coming to this earth and dying on a cross just to go back to where he was before? But we want to serve and get something out of it. It doesn't sound like it reflects Christ, does it? But Jesus does get something out of it. He gets family. We get something out of it. We get family. People who are passionate about the same things we're passionate about. People who get to be light in a world full of darkness. We get to be something that God knows we can be when we struggle to accept that that's where he wants us to be, in his presence daily. And he will rescue us from death. And we will be people who offer others life from death. Isn't that amazing? Isn't it awesome that we have the God who speaks the reality and truth into this world, that says that you are valuable when the world says you're not? That the Son says you're worth dying for when you don't understand why or how? And that the Spirit wants to come alongside of you, and if you're his child, he wants to empower and live within you. That while you're being transformed into his likeness, that he will walk with you every step of the way. And when the words of other people try to lie to you, that tell you you're not that at all, that you can stand up in God's truth, in God's word, and say, yes, I am, even when I'm struggling to believe it. Because my faith isn't in me anymore. My faith isn't in other people anymore. My faith is in a God who is beyond this world. And it's because of that precious faith that is more precious than all the shiny things of this world, that I'm willing and Christ was willing to give all those things up. Because that faith is precious to the Father, and that faith resides in us. And we are precious to the Father. Oh. I hope you focus on this week, knowing who you are and being firmly planted in God's word, God's truth, so that you can endure the pains of this world as you are a light in this world for the sake of the world, as you're part of God's kingdom that lasts forever. Let's stand and give that God praise.